Live from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, it's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and the callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now, here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
Welcome to Chatterbox Video Game Radio, everyone. It's a beautiful Sunday night here in Phoenix. I don't know about where you are, but it all looks good here. Andrew, that's right. You always you do the weather, right?
Indeed.
Oh, did I just coax you to talk on the air, Andrew? That's fantastic. See, he won't do it again. Thank you, though. So Nate's not here in studio this week, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But we are going to have a wonderful show. Me, we would be, of course, the listeners, and myself. So tonight I'm going to talk about GDC. I just came back from GDC. It seems that I actually haven't slept, I don't think, in about a week. So, you know, worked a couple days. Went off Tuesday night, I think drove all through the night, got there Wednesday morning just in time to hear Phil Harrison talk on behalf of Sony about all of their big plans for the PSP and the Sony PlayStation 3. Then, of course, Satoru Iwata spoke, the big Nintendo keynote, got to see Will Wright talk. Whole lot of things there, because, of course, that's what the GDC is all about. So I'm going to start off the show, try to do it the way we normally do, even though I'm host-less. But since I don't have anyone to talk to, it'd be great if you could call in the show, 866-536-1100. Keep me company, you know, because being here by myself, Andrew behind the glass just doesn't do it for me. Doesn't have that personal flavor, you know. All right, so 866-536-1100. And, of course, if you want to see what's going on with the show, you can always go to chatterboxgameshow.com and visit the forums, which are linked from there. Okay, so first off, GDC. I said we're going to talk about Nintendo. We're going to talk about Sony. I also saw, it wasn't a keynote speech, but one of the sessions there, and there are many, involved some people in the video game industry and our favorite California assemblyman, Leland Yee. He's the one who writes all the bills that Schwarzenegger signs, and then everybody in their right mind gets, you know, injunctions on, so they don't actually do anything for months and months. But he is very, very excited about winning the court case and putting his bill into action. So I got to hear him talk. I didn't get to ask him a question because there was very little time. And so I think I was the second person in line who didn't get to ask, but people in front of us did. And of course, took up a lot of time because, well, it's hard to restrict yourself to just one question when you're talking to a guy like that. So I'm going to talk about that as well. Now, one thing we found out at the Nintendo keynote, Satoru Iwata had a lot to talk about. And towards the end, he made quick mention, sort of casually. You know what? People asked if Nintendo games are going to be all that you can play on our Revolution Virtual Console. They said, well, you know, you're going to be able to download Nintendo and Super Nintendo and Nintendo 64 games, right? You already know all that. But what about, how would you feel if maybe we played some Genesis and some TurboGrafx games? Wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that be great? So we were all very excited about that. And of course, didn't even hear him say TurboGrafx. Genesis came out of his mouth and it was instantly just screaming applause and yay. And this is the time for Andrew to be on the applause button, but he doesn't. I have to actually tell him how to handle the sound. There it is. Oh, yay! Everybody in the Nintendo keynote goes crazy. It's hard for me to simulate that with just my two hands. And so we were very excited. I looked over at my friend Wes, who joins me at all these conferences we go to. Looked over at Nate, and, well, this is Nate Cox, the host who's filled in for Nate Vig at some point in time. Stared over my two buddies, and there were tears in our eyes, and we were all excited. So I'm curious what you think you would like to see for the Virtual Console for Genesis and TurboGrafx, because we haven't given this a lot of thought yet in terms of playing them on the Revolution. I'm also especially curious how they're going to handle playing Genesis games that had, you know, six buttons in a row. I guess they're going to have to release a new controller specifically for playing old games on the system. We've talked about that in the past. They'll surely do that, although I don't think there have been official announcements. But playing TurboGrafx, that's cake. It's like a Nintendo controller. But the Genesis had six buttons. So he said not all games are going to be released, but the best ones. So I'm curious, what do you think the best games are for Genesis and TurboGrafx, and what you'd like to see on the system? So give us a call. I'll say the number again. It's 866-536-1100. And you can call in any time during the show today. I'll be taking calls throughout the show, provided you actually call in. Okay, so what have I been playing this week? First off, I played Brain Age. When we left the Nintendo keynote, Mr. Iwata-san was nice enough to give everybody in the audience a copy of Brain Age, the game that I think it's coming out April 17th, sometime soon, right? It's not out yet. But he was talking, one of the beautiful things about this game is how it expands the market, and it gets, you know, mom and grandma and everybody to play games who might not have been playing games previously. So he said, This is a grassroots effort. It took people playing it to get into it. So I'm going to give you all a copy of the game. And maybe you'll do me a favor and let everybody else in your family try this game out who maybe wouldn't normally play. And that was awfully nice of them. So I gave it a shot and had already gotten a chance to actually play it on the floor. Brain age. How would I describe brain age? Imagine fourth grade, maybe third grade. I have a hard time recalling. But step back in the way, way back machine and do some mathematics. Play some Sudoku, you know, that's what brain age is. But you do these timed math problems, but with other people. And there was actually a time when we were, my friends Wes and Nate, and we were also hanging out with Gaming Steve. You can go to GamingSteve.com. He's got a wonderful podcast too, gaming podcast. So Gaming Steve, Nate, and Wes and I are sitting down at the end of the conference. We're relaxing because it's the end of the show. There's nothing left to do. And just sort of waiting for people to clear out and figure out what we're going to do for the evening. And a girl, I guess, works for Intel. She just sat down and like, hey, can I take a seat? Sure. Sounds good. And she whips out her pearl pink Nintendo DS. So I've been trying to find people to play Brain Age with me. I was like, oh, you know, I didn't bring my DS. Sorry. That, of course, is code for I don't have a DS. But Wes was on his way. He was there, and he has his Nintendo DS. But anyway, Wes wasn't sitting down there yet. He came a minute later. But she actually had two. So she whips out her second DS. She has me download Brain Age onto the DS so I can play with her. She wants to play against somebody. First round, doing the math problems. 4 plus 3, 16 minus 9, 4 times 5. This is tough stuff, right, Andrew? You're like, how is this a game, you ask? Anyway, it actually is kind of fun. So she's playing and I'm playing at the same time. 3, 2, 1, go! And I beat her. I got like 29.15 seconds, something like that. Beating 30 seconds was apparently good. So I was all excited. First round, beat her by a very small margin. And then, of course, the second and third round, she won. Sort of a bummer. Handwriting recognition, I blame it all on the DS. But I failed. But at least I beat her once. And then I had to go talk to someone else. And then Wes and Nate and Gaming Steve all tried, and they all lost. They didn't even win one match. So I'm still the king of the hill there when it comes to simulated mathematics problems on a Nintendo DS. But it was a good time. It's actually it's kind of an interesting game. It's not just math. There's a lot more to it. And they do have Sudoku games hidden inside. Not really hidden. It's a major part of the game, but it's there. And it's interesting. I believe it's also going to be inexpensive. It's already, there's like three different versions out in Japan, and I believe it goes for the equivalent of about $20, whatever a $20 game would go for over there. So, yeah, it should be inexpensive, comes out in a few weeks. I definitely recommend giving a shot. It's more interesting than you'd think, although, you know, not incredibly interesting, because it is just, you know, a bunch of math and non-math brain training exercise, but it is cool when you're playing with somebody else, and certainly something to get mom interested in getting a DS in case you didn't already have one. And then, of course, you can parlay that into playing your favorite everything, like Zelda, which also was mentioned in the Nintendo conference, Zelda for the DS. Anyway, we've got a couple minutes before we go. We got like 2 minutes, 3 minutes. All right. So that's what I've been playing. I was playing Brain Age. There was something else, though. Let me look at my list here. Played a lot of Guitar Hero at the show, because, of course, they have people wanting to get people to their booth. And so I was playing some Guitar Hero, and that was a good time. Unfortunately, it was like the French version. We didn't have the unlock codes, but I got to play the first 10 songs over and over and over. But more importantly than that was the IGF, the Independent Games Festival, or Challenge, or whatever it is. They had the grouping outside of the exhibition hall, actually. You can go and play all the independent games. And we had talked about on the show, I had these high hopes of playing all the games that were in the competition, the final runner-ups before the show actually happened. And of course, that was a lofty goal. Didn't happen, but I did play a few, and I got to see those that I recognized, which was a first for me. Normally, I don't play those ahead of time, so that was neat. But one I hadn't played was called Ballistic. And this is made, I think, by some folks at Southern Michigan University. I think that's right. Take a look at it. Ballistic was really fantastic. And believe it or not, it's actually very similar to some other games that I've heard of, like, was it Loco Moco? There's a game for the PSP that Phil Harrison had talked about during the Sony thing, where you have to like tilt the screen and move a giant jelly looking being by tilting the screen. And so Ballistic is similar, but it's not nearly as cutesy. It's more like futuristic and stuff like that. So you've got this ball thing or something that has a bunch of spikes on it, so it looks like a ball. And all you do is rotate the screen, and you have to get it, you know, from point to point in certain goals. And then there's stuff like you can hit things that reverse gravity. So gravity goes up instead of down. You can get a grapple to grapple on stuff. And it's really cool because it's like this action puzzle mix which is just fascinating. I definitely recommend giving Ballistic a try. Now, I didn't get the chance to try all of them there. It's very busy. Lots of people playing. You have to wait a long time to get your hands on one of the games. But I saw that, and I really liked it. I played some others. There's a game like Putt Nuts, I think. It's called Putt Nuts for the PSP and for the PlayStation 2 and for the PC. And that looks sort of fun. I think it needs some work, but it looked good. It was a new twist on mini golf. Anyway, I'm going to be back after the break to talk much more in-depth about the Sony and Nintendo keynotes. And hopefully you'll give me a call at 866-536-1100. Hope to hear from you soon. Back again, everybody. Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Like I said, Sunday night. Always enjoy myself here in the studio. And tonight, unfortunately, I have no Nate to join me. But I do have Andrew, and that always makes me happy. And, of course, the many, many listeners listening live to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. And we're even talking on IRC. I don't know if you're a fan of Internet Relay Chat, but we're in Ryzon.net in the Chatterboxers room. You can join us every week. Normally, we're in a different one, but I guess the server that we're on, Dynasty Net or something, is all bustiggled. So this week we're somewhere else, for short. I don't know. Maybe we'll switch permanently. Anyway, I said I was going to talk about Sony and Nintendo's keynote. Now, in truth, keynotes are often, or always, I don't know, depends on really who's giving it, pretty thin on details. Like, usually, even when they announce a big system, we already have all the details anyway, and they just make the official announcement, like, yeah, we will have an Xbox 360 when they did the keynote. It's going to do this. Great. Now, this time around, it was especially thin because they didn't officially make any big announcements. Like, they didn't give the date or the pricing for the Nintendo Revolution. They didn't announce exactly when the PS3 was coming out, although we pretty much have a good idea now anyway, early November. But here, let me start off and talk about Sony. Most people that I talk to were like, the Sony GDC keynote, Phil, there was nothing special, right? And now I look at it this way. I was very excited because of this. Normally, you go into these keynotes, and I've been going to these for years. Like 5 years ago or 6 years ago, something absurd, the PS2 was announced and discussed in full detail. And they said, hey, it's going to be able to do these great things. It's going to have power like 1,000 or 100 times that of the PlayStation. It's amazing. It can do everything and cook your dinner for you. And they brought out, and this is before the PS2 was ever even out at all. The guy who deals with all the cool controls and stuff in R&D brought out the iToy. And again, before the iToy was called the iToy, that we're talking 6 years ago, brought it out with some short baseball bat looking things, right, that were like orange and green, and did a demonstration and was basically able to hold, a Morningstar, a mace, in the context of the game. He was just holding the little the handle baseball bat thing, right? But in the game, it was a Morningstar with great physics and great lighting and moving around a candle and all sorts of stuff, and it was wonderful. And the game was acting solely on what he was doing with his hands in front of the iToy, and I was super excited. I said, I love special controls. This is great. Let's see that. And 5 years later, we get the iToy. It barely works. They don't tell us to wear green and orange gloves like that guy did, although I got to tell you, it would work better. My point is, They give us really high hopes. And they talked about, a couple years ago, the move to Sony Online with the network adapter and episodic gaming. You'll be able to download stuff to the hard drive. It'll be great. All these new gaming experiences will be introduced to you thanks to the power of the PS2 online and the hard drive that we have available. All right. Of course, things that the Xbox had in the box, the day you bought it. But forget that. Sony's finally getting on the bandwagon. They have these great ideas. And the truth is, those great ideas, they might happen, but they're not happening until the PS3. They gave up, and this was years ago. And my concern here is that Sony comes out, and they have this huge canned keynote where they talk about the future and how amazing it is, and it never happens. It never happens until the next generation. And, I mean, it's cool and all that they finally get around to it, but it really, what words should I use here, Andrew? Busts my britches, butters my buns, burns my brisket. Pisses me off that they basically lie over and over and over, and then maybe eventually, maybe they'll get to it. And so this time was totally different. He came out, he didn't make any unwarranted claims. Nothing was crazy. He said, yeah, we're going to have a hard drive in the system. We're going to have a PSP with some new stuff. We're going to have a GPS and something else for the PSP that didn't excite me. The GPS I want to talk about. This is what we're going to do. We're going to have God of War 2. Let's all be excited. They had the Kevin Jaffe. I think his name's Kevin. Eric, maybe. I don't know. Jaffe comes out, the lead guy behind God of War, and talks about God of War 2, shows some footage. They show some footage of the PSP Locomoco game. Great. But it was pretty tame. And I appreciate that because I'm sick of getting screwed around. And I really, honestly, am glad that that's the way they did it. I'm sick of going in there and suddenly getting all excited about the system. Although I got to tell you, I think they hurt themselves because usually, oh, I don't care about the PS2, no big deal. I'll get it whenever a good game comes out. They do the keynote, and then I think it's the greatest thing ever, and I have to go buy it first day. So, you know, maybe I'm not as excited as I used to be, but of course, since they're only going to release like a few hundred thousand in America in November, it doesn't matter, because I'm pretty sure I'd have to actually physically kill people to get my hands on one come November. So no big deal. They're reducing the hype up front, and I can appreciate that. Anyway, that's my point. It was really great of them not to be such bastards and make a lot of promises. They did talk about stuff like their online plans, and like I said, they'd have a hard drive and all that stuff. And again, excited, but they didn't overdo it. But they did mention, like I said, a PSP GPS. Now this is fantastic. I said when the Gizmondo was going to have the GPS, of course no one's going to have the Gizmondo, no one's going to play it, no one's going to make any GPS games for it. But what a great idea that would be. How fantastic would it be to have a GPS in your game? You'd be able to walk around in the real world. We talk about all these alternative reality games that people are coming out with now, and a GPS game would give you that alternate reality, but real reality, the mix, it'd be great. Now, one thing I'm a little bit concerned about, I don't know enough about GPS technology, but I don't think you can send information. Like cell phones, you can transmit your location to someone else with a cell phone and see where you are, but that's because you've got a cell connection. With GPS, I'm pretty sure you only receive if that's all you got. And so with a PSP, you wouldn't be able to play multiplayer GPS games. I mean, unless you're walking around with a Wi-Fi connection at the same time, and that'd be awfully difficult if you're walking around the middle of Phoenix to have that Wi-Fi connection. But in cities where you have a full city Wi-Fi connection, oh, that would be great. I mean, like, we had that real Pac-Manhattan, I think it was called, people walking around. That would totally be suited for this. And if they let people write their own software, another thing they talked about with the PSP is running software from the memory stick and how you're going to be able to download PS1 games to the memory stick too. And so maybe if they let people develop their own GPS software, stuff like Pac-Manhattan could become a reality for anyone who lives in a city that has, Wi-Fi everywhere. But I'm super excited about GPS technology working its way into games. And even if they don't make a game with GPS, I still want the GPS because it's always fun to have when you're driving, say, to San Jose and you need to know how to get there because you're going to a conference. But I'd love to hear if anybody else thinks it's as cool as I am. And I'm still looking, by the way, for you to call and tell me what Genesis games you want to play on the Nintendo. 866-536-1100. But it'll be good times because GPS games, it's just, I don't want to call it a revolution. Nintendo throws around the word revolution and innovation, but it's another step in alternate gaming styles. And you all know I'm a big fan of that. So with that, let's move over to the Nintendo keynote. Satoru, big discussion. He starts off telling us a story, talks about how his board of directors, old guy, wants to have games that old people are going to play. So let's make a game for old people. And then like, well, let's, everybody seems to be reading this book called Brain Training in Japan, I guess. And then like his chief financial officer was reading that book. And so he mentioned, well, let's make games that are good for old people. But then this brain training stuff is greatly popular in book form. So let's go talk to this guy who writes Brain Training, this professor guy, and let's make a game for it. They put a prototype together. They went and talked to this guy. Like, the day the Nintendo DS comes out, they go and talk to this guy because it's the only day they could talk to him. Sit down, talk to him for 3 hours, and they're like, this is going to be a fantastic idea. We're going to have a Nintendo DS Brain Training game. And, of course, it's been wildly popular in Japan. Several million sold. I think 5 million so far over the three different versions have been sold of a game that's not even a game, that's just educational. And historically, educational games for these systems, portable or not, have tanked. And only exist in the end of a system's life cycle. So I'm really happy that they did something successful here. And believe it or not, it's kind of sort of fun. And especially when it's cheap, it's not hard to pick up. And you can convince, like I said, mom and dad to get you a Nintendo DS. So he tells us this story about how this all happens. And it's a funny story because they always write some good speeches for him. But the key thing behind the Nintendo keynote, at all these Nintendo things, they always try to drive a single subliminal message into your head. I don't know if anybody else has noticed this, but when they were talking about the Nintendo DS, I think at E3 last year, or 2 years ago, anyway, when they were talking about it, Reggie comes out and he pulls the DS fluidly out of his inner pocket, jacket pocket. Oh, look, it was in my pocket. Doesn't say it. Just lets everybody see like five times during the show, and then Satoru Iwata did the same thing. Pulls it out of the jacket pocket. Look, it's not this giant handheld machine, which in reality it is, although the new light is much smaller and cooler and looks like an iMac. Anyway, they pull out of their pocket, just letting everybody know, look at how tiny it is. It's not going to weigh down your left breast pocket too much. And of course, Satoru Iwata, his subliminal thing was a little bit different this time. It was disruption. And we're going to talk about disruption, the big buzzword, when we come back. I'll be back after this. Give us a call, 866-536-1100. Welcome back, Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Once again, third segment, everybody. We still got half the show left, and it's going to be good. So, here's what's going on. I want to correct a couple things or go back and talk about some things. Before I do that, though, got to remind everybody that UAT.edu, a great sponsor of ours, University of Advancing Technology, place to go if you're interested in getting into the industry. And actually, Nate Cox, hung around with him quite a bit at GDC. He is a product of that school and is most definitely going to get... work with them, and we already talked about how he worked with Rainbow Studios as an intern over there. Is that the word? An intern? I think so. He had an internship. Anyway, he gave away his resume, and he'll surely be getting hired with one of the companies. Every company at GDC was hiring. There were signs everywhere. We're hiring. We need new artists and modelers and everything because, well, the new systems are out, so they need new modelers or more. All right, so anyway, I want to go back. One of the main things that I didn't mention about the Sony keynote, this was a little sleazy. I said I liked it. There's one thing. Right at the beginning of the conversation, he said, I don't remember exactly how Phil put it, but he made the point of mentioning that they managed to get people with the PS2 or with PlayStation. I think he meant probably the original one, actually, now that I think about it. They managed to get people to accept a higher price tag for a video game console. I don't know if you recall, but the original PlayStation 1 and PlayStation 2 came out at $300, and previously the standard was $200 set by Nintendo with all their systems and the Genesis and all that from Sega. So he mentioned that, and of course didn't mention the price for the PS3. I'm very much expecting $500 or potentially more, but at least $500, especially now that they've tacked the hard drive into that. All right, so I ended last segment, now that I've fixed that little Sony bit, talking about disruption from Nintendo and their little subliminal message. So he made the point of mentioning disruption several times and sort of beating it into us, and actually not so subliminal, but the point is that they're disrupting the video game industry, which is actually really cool. Now, they said they disrupted Wi-Fi gameplay. I'm not sure. Certainly wireless with the handhelds, that was new, but we've been doing, well, network gaming, and who cares if it's wireless or not. But disrupting what's considered a game with Brain Age and with, they said from the very beginning, Tetris. Who would have, if you introduced Tetris these days, who would have wanted to publish Tetris? No, it's lame. You need a movie license. You need better graphics. You need better, all this stuff, right? They said, we made Tetris. Everybody loved it. It sold millions of systems. We made Brain Age, which is a new type of game. We disrupted Wi-Fi. And now there's this concept of Wi-Fi internet gaming, which they've done really well. And by the way, there's voice over IP in the new Metroid Prime Hunters. I don't know if anyone knew that. Hopefully you all knew. Anyway, and the newest and best is they're disrupting control mechanisms and what's acceptable gaming technique with the Nintendo Revolution. Of course, we all know I'm a big fan of that, and hopefully you are as well, because the system's going to rock your world. All right, so that's about... I think everything that I wanted to cover. Looking here at Nintendo. Oh no, there was one more really good thing. Iwata said the video game industry was starting to look like a bookstore where you can only buy one type of book. And he was like, we aren't offering magazines and soft cover books and audio books, all the different types. We're just going with these hardcore games that are full price, and you know, you buy that or you don't play video games. And he had talked about price and how they're allowed to make different types of games that cater to different price ranges, because you know, if you make a game that's smaller, then great, you sell it at a lower price, you sell a bunch more hopefully, and you still do well. You're not forced to make these games that take 5 years and invest, you know, 100 different programmers and artists and everything. And that was sort of cool. He's like, yeah, you know what, we can get magazines. It's basically the equivalent of saying episodic content and simpler games and all that, because, and I've heard this from many people, it's something that Gaming Steve told me the other day too, is like, much rather have a great 10-hour gaming experience than a mediocre 100-hour gaming experience. Who wants to play something for that long that's no good, or gets old after a while, or you know, the last levels in the game don't look as cool as the first levels in the game because they put all their energy in the beginning. So anyway, a great short game, and this is seen by a lot of the Xbox Live Arcade games, can be a lot more valuable to people than these long, extensive games that are lame. And that's one thing Nintendo's talking about. New types of game experiences that don't have to be so epic and great. Anyway, on that note, I'm going to go to the phones. We've got a few callers here. They want to talk about the Genesis games they want to see. This is what I asked you to call in about. Lines are still open. 866-536-1100. Call us. Right now, we've got Adam from Ontario talking about his favorite Genesis games that he wants to see on the Revolution. Am I right?
Yep.
Excellent. So what are your top three?
Number one would have to be X-Men, the original, not the Clone Wars. Number two would be Street Fighter II Hyper Fighting. And
okay.
And number three would be Terminator, the arcade game.
Terminator, the arcade game. Hadn't thought about that. Now, one question. Someone else on IRC mentioned Mortal Kombat 2 for Genesis, and I'm curious, why would you want Street Fighter Hyper Fighting and the other guy, Mortal Kombat 2, for Genesis when there are better versions on the Super Nintendo?
Why would I? I don't really like Mortal Kombat at all.
All right, well, let's talk about Street Fighter. You said Hyper Fighting for the Genesis.
Yep.
Why would you rather have Hyper Fighting for the Genesis when you could have it on Super Nintendo?
The sound quality was better.
You like the sound
better?
I
believe, yes.
But the graphics.
Graphics doesn't make a game. You should know that.
Well, I know, but neither does sound, right? Not in a game that's a fighting game.
That's true.
So, what do you do? Is sound better or graphics?
The reason why is because the Genesis had the six-button controller that allowed you to have better control over the game.
Agreed. However, you're going to get whatever controller they make for the Revolution.
That's true.
Something to think about. All right, so you said Street Fighter Hyper Fighting. And repeat your other two. I need to cover these again.
Terminator 2, the arcade game.
All right. Terminator 2, the arcade game. I'm trying to type all these out. And the other one?
Was X-Men.
X-Men. And the original X-Men.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. So, now what about TurboGrafx? Did you ever play the TurboGrafx?
No, I haven't.
All right. I did. I have some ideas. There's a very popular pinball game for the TurboGrafx. I can never remember which one is which, but there's a few different pinball games. Basically, a horror-style pinball game. And there are also some really good Turbo CD games, Super CD games, for the Turbo Duo. And that's something I doubt that they're going to release, because it's going to be too much to download.
They announced it that they were.
What?
Yeah.
How did I miss this? They announced they are going to do the CD games?
They are for the TurboGrafx, but not, they don't know for the Genesis yet.
For the Sega CD.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's awesome then, because they're going to be able to release, again, all the names, it's so long ago, I don't remember the names, but they had some fantastic shooters for the Turbo Duo, and they also have some really cool puzzle games, at least I have one, something called Splash Lake. I still have that CD at my house, Super CD. Anyway, thanks for calling in, Adam. I'm going to move to a few other people who have suggestions for Genesis games.
Yeah,
so far, we've got Terminator 2 Arcade, X-Men, and Street Fighter Hyper Fighting. I don't understand it. I would put a fighting game on Super Nintendo, because they're almost always better. Although there were some for the Genesis that weren't even out on Super Nintendo. But let's talk to Dan in New Jersey about the Genesis games he wants to see on the Nintendo Revolution. Dan, are you there?
Yeah, hey.
All right, tell me what you think.
Okay, have you ever played Zombies Ate My Neighbors?
I have heard wonderful things. I cannot tell a lie. Not actually played it for more than like 2 minutes as a demo, but I need to go back and play it.
It's one of the best games ever.
Of course, another game also available on Super Nintendo.
Yeah, but you know, why would you do that?
I guess we're just talking about old school games we want to play, whether or not you could get them on Super Nintendo or Genesis. I'm also curious, you think they'll release, let's say they release Street Fighter Hyper Fighting or Mortal Kombat 2, a game that is visibly different based on the Super Nintendo or Genesis. You think they would ever do that? I doubt it.
Yeah, I don't think
they would. Although, in the case of Mortal Kombat 2, with Acclaim being dead right now and selling off the rights to every game that they own, probably not going to see their game on the system anyway, even though I would like to. All right, so what are your three again?
I actually had the one. I was trying to think of some others, but I couldn't. So
just one?
Yeah.
All right, cool. So Zombies Ate My Neighbors.
Yeah.
I'll put that on the list again. And, of course, I can send these over to Nintendo when we're all done. But I'm sure they already know this information. Anyway, Zombies Ate My Neighbors. And let's see, Super Putty. You ever play Super Putty for Super Nintendo?
I've never played that.
I think that was on Genesis, too. But, again, I'm just naming Nintendo games. All right, I'm going to move on. We've got another caller, Kyle from California. Thanks for calling, by the way. Dan, Kyle, you're on the air.
Hey, I was just going to talk about the PS3. I saw a tech demo.
Okay.
GDC.
Right on. Let's switch gears. Tell me about the PS3 tech demo.
Well, it was like a rubber ducky in a bathtub.
With the ships and the cannonballs and the duckies. Gotcha.
Like a physics demo. It looked cool, you know, but I don't really believe it because, you know, the old man face for the PS2, like right when it first started, like that looks nothing like the PS2 graphics right now. So I just don't believe that's going to... You know.
So you think their demos are more than you're actually ever going to see in the system?
Yeah, exactly.
All right. And you know why that is, though?
Why?
It's because you've got these Sony people who know the hardware in and out and have been working on these things, which are relatively small in terms of gameplay and design, but they get to put all of their effort into making it look pretty and the physics working properly and all that. And so it's always been the case that the demos are just that. They're tech demos to see what could the system do and whether or not a developer can do that. Plus, you're putting a whole ton of power into something that's, like I said, small on gameplay and other elements. You're posting all of it there. Although they did show that the tech demo was using less than 50% of the system. Like this, I think they call it an SPU, this part of the cell processor, you know, the one that handles this stuff and this stuff and this stuff. Less than 50% of each of them for that particular tech demo, if I remember my numbers correctly. It did look fantastic, what they were showing off, and I believe it was running on their hardware. But I agree with you that it's probably beyond what you're going to see in these games, especially first generation. You never see anything significantly, you know, comparable at least to the later generation games in the first generation. And that's just, of course, because of the time the developers have with it. Did you see any other demos? You were actually at GDC?
I was not. I just saw it, a video online.
Saw the video of it. So did you see anything else that bothered you with the PS3?
No, not really. But
how about anything that impressed you with it?
Not anything.
Really? You know, I got a picture of the actual the box that was running those things. Big old, just looked like a big stereo unit. It was really large. I don't know if anyone ever wants to see those pictures. You can let me know online. I'll put them up there if you want. But yeah, I'm with you there. Probably not going to see the extent of the technology for at least a few years. But if you look at the games now on the PS2, God of War and some stuff that really pushes it, Gran Turismo 4, I mean, that looks amazing. And the old man face, was that a Shenmue 2 demo?
I'm not sure. I just remember a tech demo for the PS2 a while back.
How it was like aging and all that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that too. I mean, if you look at games nowadays that, like cutscenes and stuff where they're able to put more power into a smaller element, then you do see some great power coming out of the system. But definitely see a full-fledged game that's that impressive. It would be great if actually they made a re-release or a report or something of Rampart in full 3D. You ever play Rampart?
No, I haven't.
You should. It was on Super Nintendo, I think, or original Nintendo, not nearly as good as the arcade. You can get your hands on the arcade ROM or something.
Right.
I'm going to totally advocate ROMing that game because it's so good. And I don't think it's on any of the old, like, you know, Midway treasures or anything like that. Of course, it's not made by Midway. Anyway, thanks for calling in, Kyle. I appreciate it.
Zombies Ate My Neighbors is a great game.
All right, fantastic. That's two votes for Zombies Ate My Neighbors. Call us, everybody, 866-536-1100. I'll be right back. Back again, everybody. Final segment for Chatterbox Video Game Radio. We've got, what are we, like another 8-10 minutes, Andrew, I think? Short segment here. We still have some people calling in wanting to talk about their suggestions for video games. Before we do that, once again, remind you about UAT. It's uat.edu, University of Advancing Technology. Get over there if you want to learn how to get into the industry. All right, so on the agenda for the rest of the day, after I take a caller here, I'm going to try and talk a little about the Leland GE discussion that I got to be there for. So we're going to talk about that. But first, I want to take, is the name Tara? Tara on line one. You're on the air.
Oh, yeah. I was just thinking of, you know, Genesis games that should be ported to the Revolution.
All right.
I think that Gunstar Heroes.
That's certainly a popular one. That's one of the few games that you saw on Genesis that you didn't see on Super Nintendo that everyone says is amazing and should definitely come over to the Revolution.
Yes.
And I'm sure it will be, by the way, especially because they just put the sequel on I think it was it the DS or the Game Boy Advance?
Game Boy Advance, I think. But, you know, that's kind of cheating a little bit.
Yeah, well, luckily, you said you used the word port earlier. You know, it's not actually a port. I mean, it's the actual game.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, so that's sort of cool. Do you have any other suggestions for it, or is it just that one?
Just that one.
All right. Some other people, I heard people mention Gunstar Heroes, and in the same breath, although it's a totally different game, Herzog's Vi for the Sega Genesis.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you played that.
No, but I do hear good things about that.
Yeah, it's supposed to be pretty amazing. I have seen people play it, and it looks very unique. So I'm sure some other examples people are going to give are Toe Jam and Earl 1 and 2 for the Sega Genesis. Those are another couple that were on there. I don't know if anyone's going to push for like Virtua Racing or anything like that. but the Toe Jam and Earl, Gunstar Heroes, Herzog's Vi, those are a lot of games that were on the Genesis that you didn't see on Super Nintendo, so it's really great that they've got this Sega collaboration to get the games out. I assume they're going to do more than just Sega games. It said Sega Genesis. So you're going to have to work out deals with every publisher on the planet that they want to get their games out for, which is why I said before Mortal Kombat you probably won't see.
Yeah.
But in case of Super Nintendo, maybe, I don't know if Nintendo has rights to part of that. Anyway, thanks for calling in.
Okay.
I appreciate it. It's good to hear that we have some female listeners to the show. I actually met a few people. One of the great things about GDC this year, I got to meet people who had heard of the show, liked the show, talked to lots of folks, talked to a guy from Penny Arcade, talked to a guy from Joystick, talk to just fans, CAs at running the GDC in their orange shirts. They were fans of the show too. At least one of them I spoke to. So that was really cool. Kind of uplifting. Gives me a big head to hear that people like the show, and I'm certainly happy that people are listening. We've got another caller, Scott, from Ontario again. Is this
Ontario? Yep.
All right. Cool. I don't know. Adam have like a big posse over there? Is that what happens, or you guys just?
No. I just listened because I heard a Jack Thompson interview a little while ago.
Ah, Jack Thompson. He did wonders for us.
Oh, yes.
Wacko Jacko. All right, so what did you have on your mind?
I'm actually going to talk about the physics, the whole new physics card they're going to try to bring in.
The Aegea physics?
The Aegea physics card. Actually, what happened was, after Aegea released a bunch of tech demos and started saying that a couple games were going to support it and such, NVIDIA and Havoc kind of got a bit freaky, and NVIDIA decided to say, okay, now I can do physics through our 6800, 7800 GPU now. So, of course, Havoc FX, I think it's Havoc 3, is going to be what NVIDIA says, the real next generation, because it's got a whole bunch of scalable. You don't have to buy a new card if you get 6800 or 7800. You're going to be able to compatible for it. So ATI, of course, can't be bested by that. So they go over and decide that they would release a little couple graphs saying, like, oh, this is what ours can do compared to what NVIDIA is, even though there's nothing actually suited for it. But what I'm actually concerned about, though, is if Aegea is considered a compatible format, what about for multiplayer? Because if one person doesn't have the Aegea card, and let's say there's a bunch of collisions that's necessary to be calculated, if all the clients are going to have that problem, or if people are just going to drop off the server because they just can't cope with the physics capacity that's required.
That's really interesting, because physics affects gameplay. However, I would like to think that the physics introduced in the game doesn't actually have an effect on gameplay, and that, well, I mean, you'd have to have the processing to tell it what to do and where to move things and all that, so you'd have to do something like that. But that's,
it's not like graphics, where your graphics is like, okay, if you can't display this many polygons, lower the resolution. You can't do that with number of objects, really.
Man, I'm willing to bet that in multiplayer situations, they would simply take out those features of the game. I mean, I saw, I think it was on joystick.com, I saw a side-by-side comparison of Ghost Recon Advanced Warfighter, right, running with a Aegea physics card and without it, and the explosion was bigger and more intense and had more particle effects and whatnot with the Aegea card, and without it, obviously didn't have that stuff. But I hadn't ever thought about multiplayer if you're dealing with different PCs that have different stuff. Yeah, that's very interesting. And in fact, it's a question we can pose to Aegea or to NVIDIA or ATI. Although,
well, NVIDIA won't really matter, because if you have a video card that can run it, it would run the NVIDIA solution.
Yeah, but when you do that, you're taking power away from your graphics. It's just like with a PC, the reason you need a 3D card is to make sure that your processor doesn't have to deal with all that, right?
Yeah.
And now, I mean, in the future, they'll be able to add stuff and add physics you know, portions or processing, whatever, or chips onto their card. And I think that's a very sensible solution, by the way. However, if they're just adding it onto existing cards, then clearly that's going to take away from the processing of what those cards were originally intended for. So
apparently it's going to take away like 2 or 3 pixel pipelines or something stupid like that.
Yeah, I think it's just a stopgap solution, but they'll come up with something better, and one of them will probably team up with AGIA. To be honest, I didn't see the big... Maybe it's just because I didn't feel like taking notice. Like, I'm huge... You've heard me talk about physics on the show before and how important I think it is.
Oh, yeah.
As, like, the next big stage in gaming, because it really will affect gaming and how we interact with the game environments. But I didn't see the big, you know, title bout of different physics providers on the show floor. I saw the name AGIA posted everywhere in some of the IGF games and whatnot. And clearly, like, the graphics cards makers are trying to do something. But I just didn't take notice. It wasn't the buzz, and so I didn't get the impression that it was that huge a deal. But clearly there are certain companies who are taking it very seriously. So thanks for calling in with that. Did you have anything else you wanted to talk about?
No.
All right, cool. Well, thanks for calling. I said I was going to talk about Leland G, but we have all these callers, and I would feel amiss if I didn't actually take them. So we're going to take Sean from Kansas.
Hey.
Sean, you're on the air.
Yeah. I had a game, well, probably... I didn't get very many games for the Sega, so this one was one I thought was pretty good. Strategy game, Operation Europe, Path to Victory.
Operation Europe. Was that made by Koei?
I think so.
All right, because that's one of those games, like, I can picture the box art, like the submarine and the smoking machine guns and all that, but I can't...
Yeah.
I never played the game, so I have absolutely no opinion on that. I think it was a Koei game, if I remember correctly. Of course, I've been wrong many, many times. Like earlier on the show when I called the PSP game Loco Moco, and it's Loco Roco. I apologize.
Yeah.
But yeah, Operation Europe, that was one of your favorite games on the system, I assume?
Yeah, and they had a bunch of different spin-offs, like different World War II ones, and then they had like one for like this Revolutionary War and stuff like that.
Operation Antarctica. Operation Australia, all the very busy warfare places, of course. All right, well, glad to hear that. It's one I certainly never thought of, and of course one that will never actually be put on the Revolution because they said the popular game, so you won't see
yeah.
it. At least I don't think you will. Who knows what happens. But that's cool. Keep thinking about it. Of course, you could send Nintendo your suggestions. What I'd like to see is the list of companies that they have talked to and agreed with. At the GDC, they actually, instead of showing a TurboGrafx or NEC logo, they showed Hudson Soft because they were... basically the main game producer for TurboGrafx. Anyway, thanks for calling in, Sean. I really appreciate it. Didn't get to Leland. It was an interesting discussion. If you want to hear about it next week, let me know through email or IRC or just call into the show and maybe I'll bring it up again. Nate should be back next week, and I will, of course, be here. And I will talk to you about everything that happens in the following week. Thank you very much for listening. Go to chatterboxgameshow.com and visit over at gamingsteve.com too. He was great, put me on his show this week, and you can hear it if you want to hear me talking about what happened at the GDC while I was at the GDC. Be back next week, everybody.
Been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your base are belong to us.